Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life. You know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Hey there, listeners. I want to give you a heads up that this episode will discuss sexual assault. Please take care while listening.
Previously on Hello, John Doe.
When I couldn't find him, I packed everything in a duffel bag because somebody said he went to Michigan. I was going to find her. I had to find her.
And I kept screaming, she's not his child. He's not her father. He just wanted her. I never thought it would be the nightmare it was.
There's this case I keep returning to. In 1962, a man kidnapped a four-year-old from a bowling alley in Hapeville, Georgia. He didn't make it very far before the police got him. Authorities all agreed the man needed psychiatric help, so they hospitalized him. But he didn't get any help. Instead, he escaped from the hospital, stole a car, and bought a gun. Now he was on the run. Eventually, he ended up in Macon, Georgia. And this man, who was just 20 years old, robbed a bank out of $6,000. He said he needed the cash to appeal his kidnapping conviction. So he went to prison for the bank robbery. And then, after he was released on parole, he went ahead and tried to kidnap a woman in Atlanta by forcing himself into her car. But the man was caught. By now, he was 30 years old. Here's FBI agent Scott Lobb.
So he knew he was going to go back to prison for that because they knew who it was, and he goes on the run.
Again, towards Charlotte, North Carolina, where he meets a woman in dire need of help. She lost her children and was desperate to get them back. You're probably wondering why I'm telling you about this fugitive. It's not just a scary story or one of the horrible things I've come across in my work with NamUs. By now, this man was a known fugitive, and you know him too.
Franklin Floyd was caught, his probation clearly violated.
And the mother, desperate to get her kids back from social services, was, of course, Sandy. This was the fateful moment when Floyd kidnapped her daughter, Susie Savakis. It took law enforcement several years to put the pieces together. By then, Floyd had already committed more crimes, each worse than the last. And it didn't help police that Floyd used more aliases than I think anyone's been able to count. Once Agent Scott Lobb learned about Floyd, he started asking himself, who was the girl on the run with Floyd?
Wanted to answer, was there ever a missing child report for this girl? And the FBI was never able to locate one because it didn't exist.
While Steve's story was hidden for so long, his sister Susie's would end up well documented. In fact, it was her kidnapping that first made me aware of this family. A book had been written about her ordeal. A couple of decades later, Susie was the subject of a Netflix documentary. Susie and Floyd assumed so many aliases over the years. By the time she was 20, no one knew who she was. No one, except the man who stole her. Before I tell you how her twisted story came to light, let's go back to her high school years. and Susie went by the name of Sharon Marshall. Sharon was an ambitious teenager who dreamt of going to college. She had friends, but what I've learned is she didn't really confide in anyone. She kept secrets to herself, including a big one. Floyd didn't just kidnap Susie. He was now passing her off as his real daughter. My name is Todd Matthews, and this is Hello John Doe, a sleuth, a family, and a serial killer. The story of a family torn apart by tragedy and my quest to bring them back together. Chapter 5, The Fugitives. After Floyd left Sandy and took off with her six-year-old daughter, he was almost gone without a trace.
He'd been all over the country with her, started in Georgia to Florida, eventually ending up in Oklahoma.
This is former FBI agent Scott Lobb. He had ended up dedicating several years of his life to this case. As he began putting the pieces together, he realized that Floyd crisscrossed the country and started passing off his captive as his daughter.
We didn't know at the time, the FBI didn't, that with any evidence that Franklin Floyd had kidnapped her. Now, had we had that, certainly there's a kidnapping investigation to be had there because he drug her all over the country.
In other words, the FBI would have been on the case had they known Floyd was crossing state lines. But remember, there wasn't even a missing persons report. Because when Sandy tried to report Susie as missing, authorities turned her away because Sandy was married to Floyd. Finally, in the mid-80s, when Susie was a teenager, they stopped outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Floyd enrolled Susie in high school, except he didn't use her real name. He told the school her name was Sharon Marshall. That's the name I'm going to use for part of this episode. That's how her friends knew her back then. Sharon began as a sophomore at Forest Park High School.
Typical 80s, big hair. It was really a good time.
The way Mia Murdoch describes it, it was kind of an all-American high school. Kind of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or something. She was in Sharon's grade, class of 1986.
I was the cheerleader. Yes, we had the jocks, the cheerleaders, but everybody got along. It wasn't bullying and any of that stuff. So it wasn't like it is today. Totally different. Every Friday or Saturday night, we played the schools that surrounded our area. So that was a big thing. Everybody loved to go to football games.
Their mascot was the Panthers. It wasn't exactly a small town. It was right outside Atlanta. But it was small enough that you noticed when there was someone new.
It was kind of weird coming in the middle of the semester, I guess.
This is Sherry Bailey, also class of 86. She was in the gifted program.
I mean, I was gifted, but I was also one of those that didn't really care.
In the middle of sophomore year, she noticed a new student in her gifted English class, Sharon.
Obviously, her father, her whatever, moved her around a lot. But she ended up staying, I think, probably the longest at Forest Park. She was there middle of sophomore year, junior year, and then senior year.
Sherry noticed the minute she stepped into English class, everyone did. Sharon was beautiful. Blue eyes, long blonde hair that was blown out, kind of like Farrah Fawcett.
So the boys' jaws dropped to the floor and, you know, they thought that they'd been gifted an angel from heaven.
She was also exceptionally smart. You had to be in those gifted classes.
We're Generation X, so we were the ones that, you know, we were the people who basically didn't care, you know.
We still don't.
She did, though. She cared a lot about her education.
Not just that. But Sharon went out of her way to be kind.
She always tried to make other people feel like they were worthy, specifically people who were not popular, not smart, not the normal. She was always rooting for the underdog.
There was a sweetness about her that Sherry recognized instantly. The two bonded right away. They went from classmates to real friends when Sharon started dating Jason. He was Sherry's friend, and he was on the football team. Sherry would pick up both Jason and Sharon from their houses on the way to school. Sharon lived less than a mile away from Sherry in a plain little ranch house.
I would go to pick her up, and Jason would have to lay down in the back floorboard of my car because her dad would date Jason.
So this big old football player would have to squeeze his ass into the back of Sherry's 78 Mustang.
So we would pull up and her dad would stand on the front porch and wait for her to get in the car and wait for us to leave. He always stayed on the porch, so we didn't really come close to him. But we knew he was creepy.
Sneaking around was a little strange to Sherry. But what was really strange was that she wasn't allowed inside Sharon's house.
Her dad would not let us in, and my other friends who were friends with her were never let inside either.
Sherry said she just seemed embarrassed by Floyd's rules, the way most teens would be by their parents. But Sherry said what made the relationship unusual was how Sharon went out of her way to do things for her father.
You know, she had told us that her mom died of cancer and that she had to take care of him and do all the things that mom did, you know, cook for him and clean and do all that stuff. So that was why she had to go straight home after school, which was a weird way to put it, but that was the way she put it to us.
Sherry didn't know what went on in that ranch house behind closed doors. No one really did. I don't know if Sharon knew her mom was alive and well and hoping she'd come home. But even her peers were skeptical of the story Sharon told. Here's her classmate, Mia Murdoch, again.
She told one friend that her mom died of cancer, and then told another friend she died in a car wreck over a bridge. And then one friend says, well, wait a minute, you said she died of cancer. She said, well, she had cancer when she was in the car wreck. So I'm sure she was just trying to shut him up because she couldn't say anything.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Franklin Floyd was a lifelong criminal, and like most, he had patterns. He would kidnap children, and he would assault them. When he was barely an adult, Floyd was convicted of molesting a 4-year-old girl. What kind of 19-year-old attacks a child in the woods? Floyd did. And after he kidnapped Sharon, he started sexually abusing her too, from a very young age. This wouldn't come out until many years later. But on a level, Sherry already knew what her friend had been going through.
A few of the friends that she did make were people who were also were abused, but I think that she probably knew people, just generally kind of recognized people who had been through similar things.
Sharon never told Sherry what was going on at home, and vice versa. But neither of them had good childhoods.
Mine wasn't normal. I would like to say it was, but it wasn't. I had a stepfather who was sexually abusive to me. I just think that like finds like, whether they know why or not, your heart just knows.
Based on what Sandy told me about Floyd's behavior, I can see how he probably controlled Sharon with fear. If he threatened Sandy against leaving, he likely did the same with Sharon. Made her stay quiet, not just about the many names and secrets, but about the abuse. Sharon was trapped.
And we had no idea how close we were to a monster the whole time.
Sherry seemed to know all was not well with her friend back in high school, but Mia didn't really get it until her ordeal was made public. Back then, Mia didn't know Floyd was a criminal or that her friend needed help.
People didn't talk about what happened in people's houses, so nobody would have thought anything different. So after the story came out, it was very eye-opening for all of us because none of us would have ever thought she lived the life she lived.
What's amazing, Sherry said, is how Sharon maintained such composure. She got great grades, participated in ROTC, had serious romantic relationships.
She had a spirit that nobody could break. You know, he's never able to break her. He tried really hard.
Back then, they buckled down and hit the books. Sherry said Sharon had a seriousness about her, a drive.
I don't know that she watched TV. I don't remember talking about that at all. Because, of course, that was Love Boat days and Fantasy Island and all that good stuff. So I think she spent most of her time studying because that was her escape.
Maybe all that studying would even be her way out, a way to escape Floyd. Sherry remembered that day in gifted class when she showed up ecstatic.
She had a full ride to Georgia Tech. That was all she ever wanted. She was beside herself. I mean, that was what she'd been wanting all along.
She was absolutely tickled. This was her dream school that would jumpstart her aerospace career. Around that time in senior year, everyone geared up for graduation, excited for what would come next. But then, Sharon's life changed again. She was with a new boyfriend, a guy named Curtis.
I was hopelessly, helplessly, deeply crazy about him.
Up until this moment, Sharon was focused on her future. In the fall, she was going to move to Atlanta and start Georgia Tech. Then she'd begin her career in aerospace, maybe as an engineer. Maybe she'd go into space herself. For Sharon, the sky was, well, the limit. But then, something happened in her senior year that slung her off course. It would jeopardize everything she'd built. And even if she didn't say anything, the secret she'd been keeping became clear.
And then it started being obvious that she was pregnant.
She started showing. People at school noticed.
Our counselor was a male. He asked a female counselor to talk to Sharon because he didn't feel comfortable. And so she brought her in the office and she said, Sharon, you know, if you're pregnant, your scholarship's going to be voided. You can't have it. And Sharon says, I'm not pregnant.
Sharon tried to hide it, but couldn't. She knew what was at stake. This was 1986. Teenage pregnancy, particularly in the South, was an incredible taboo. She lost her scholarship.
They took it away from her because she was pregnant. They couldn't have that, which is ridiculous. I mean, through all everything that she'd been through, not that they knew that, but I'm pretty sure she could have still gotten an aeronautics engineering degree and had a baby and taken care of it. You know, she could have juggled that.
To me, this feels like such a knife twist. Sharon already endured being kidnapped by Floyd, lied on his behalf, changed her name from Susie to Sharon, moved around, survived sexual abuse, and the one thing that stood in the way of her dreams was some old-fashioned policy about teen pregnancy. Some say it was the school's decision. Curtis says Floyd kept her from college.
He talked her out of going.
Here's her friend, Sherry, again.
People said that she wasn't at graduation. She was at graduation. We talked to her in the parking lot. She was in her cap and gown. I did see her, but she was 9 months pregnant at graduation. They would not let her walk.
Sharon had made salutatorian. Basically, that's a runner-up to the valedictorian. In other words, she was a damn good student.
She looked so pregnant in that white gown. I don't even remember what we talked about. I just remember, you know, standing out in the parking lot talking about what was going to happen after graduation, about the parties or whatever.
But when Sherry went out that night, she didn't see Sharon like she had hoped. She didn't see her that summer either. Sharon just dropped off the map.
It was that night. You know, it was after that night. We just never solitude. She just disappeared.
It's not like there were social media or even cell phones. With Sharon out of her house, there wasn't a landline to call. Sherry kind of assumed Sharon had gone somewhere to have the baby, but wasn't sure what happened beyond that.
I mean, I guess we must have thought that he took her somewhere to, like, a girl's, you know, a wayward teenage girl's or something. I don't know.
But she never forgot about Sharon. Imagine what she'd be doing after college and into middle age.
She'd probably be living in Texas, working for NASA, and have a couple of sweet little kids.
When Sherry thinks about Sharon, she can still picture her in the hallways at Forest Park High School.
Probably just propped up against lockers talking and just being girls, laughing and being happy when we finally get out of sight of her dad. She had the, you know, the blown out curl and super blonde, and she would wear Jason's Letterman jacket, which would swallow her whole because she was all of maybe 5'2".
Sherry wouldn't be the only person to lose track of Sharon Marshall. She's right. Right after graduation, Sharon and Floyd packed up and moved cross-country, just as Floyd had done for decades. It was by design. It's why he changed her name from Susie to Sharon. He didn't want her to ever be found. So let me tell you what actually happened after graduation. Sharon, her boyfriend Curtis, and her father left Georgia.
I pretty much sold everything I had so we could have money to move out to Arizona.
Curtis wasn't exactly thrilled about the situation. He hated Floyd, said he was erratic. He'd yell at the top of his lungs in public.
Sharon or Suzanne would giggle whenever he did that, like it was nothing. And I'm like sitting there looking at him like, oh, freaking moron. I was nice to him because of her. And there were a few times where I tried to talk her into her and I taking off somewhere else, but she didn't want to leave her dad.
That's why Floyd followed him to Arizona. She didn't want to leave him behind. Previously, Floyd had done odd jobs for money, but now he let a teenager be the breadwinner.
At the time, waterbeds were still kind of popular, so I did some waterbed installing. So I would work, those two would be at home at the apartment. It's a single-level apartment. But I know that dipshit used to sleep on the couch most of the time, always complaining about his back. And excuse my French sometimes, but I really hate that guy.
One day, Curtis came home to a horrible surprise. There were two strangers standing in his apartment.
She pulled me in the bedroom and told me, the child's not yours. I'm giving it up for adoption. And I'm like flabbergasted. And of course, I get mad. I get pissed. I start screaming because I felt very betrayed.
Curtis kicked the two out. He was so pissed off.
They ended up moving to staying in a motel or something in town. She was a waitress somewhere, last I heard, and I didn't talk to him again.
At the time, Curtis didn't know the full extent of Floyd's abuse. Mia said she can imagine how scared Sharon must have been.
People want to judge and say, why didn't she do this and that? But how can you stand up to a man when you're that tiny and you're scared to death of him? So I'm sure she couldn't stand up to him and say, I want to stay with Curtis.
The baby, born in 1986, was put up for adoption in Arizona. And not long after, Floyd and Sharon took off again. Floyd had a habit of ducking and dodging questions. He'd been doing this since the 1960s. It's what allowed him to continue living as a fugitive. You could say state and federal agencies are also to blame, considering how many cracks in the system that Susie fell through. Scott Lobb, the FBI investigator, said it was hard to pinpoint exactly where they went and why.
He wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't talk to anybody about it. If he did, he lied and just outright was defiant, said, I'm not going to say anything.
This was a time before we had cell phones in our back pockets, bouncing across towers that tracked our every move.
They didn't have the technology back then, you know, the instant access to the fingerprint database when you fingerprint somebody. But when he thought somebody was getting too close, if something didn't seem right to him, one of the neighbors gave him a sideways glance or started asking too many questions, he'd pick up and off they'd go to the next town. So he just continually moved when he felt the walls were closing in.
Which led them to Florida. 2 years after she graduated, Sharon was pregnant again. This time it wasn't entirely clear who the baby's father was, but Floyd apparently thought it was his. The boy was born on April 21st, 1988. Sharon called him Michael Hughes. Here's her friend Sherry.
Michael was the only one he let her keep, and he knew how much she loved him.
While in Florida, they moved into the Golden Lantern trailer park. And instead of doing anything related to aerospace or Georgia Tech, Sharon became a dancer at a strip club. It was called Mons Venus. And there was a brunette dancer who apparently took a liking to Sharon. The two became fast friends. Her name was Cheryl Ann Camesso. Cheryl was a natural performer. She always sang and danced. And she was even in the 1987 Miss Brandon Beauty Pageant, named for the town where she lived with her family. Her big dream was to be in Playboy. And when Floyd told Cheryl he could help her become a centerfold, she believed him. But in April 1989, Cheryl, who was 18 at the time, left home to spend the night with friends. That was the last time anyone saw her. She'd end up being one of the many Jane Does in this story.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
After Cheryl went missing, Sharon and Floyd left town again. By this point, they had moved so much they were always strangers to their neighbors. But this time, Floyd settled on a new tactic. He married Sharon. He wasn't just abusing her behind closed doors. Now he was fixing to pass her off as his wife in public. In 1989, they got married in New Orleans. She was just 19 years old and he was 46. He used the name Clarence Marcus Hughes. Susie Cevegas, who had become Sharon Marshall, now took on another alias, Tanya Dawn Hughes. Later, he'd tell government investigators that it was a marriage of convenience so that Michael could have a father. And this marriage would help him fly under the radar. Authorities were looking for a man and his daughter, not a wife.
They had dialed in where Franklin Floyd had taken her. He'd been all over the country with her, started in Georgia to Florida, eventually ending up in Oklahoma.
Tanya, a.k.a. Sharon, a.k.a. Susie, worked as a dancer at an Oklahoma City strip club. After years on the run, Floyd was caught in Oklahoma City on a complaint of assaulting another woman.
He was a handyman at an apartment complex and got caught in some girl's apartment.
But Floyd, being slippery, wouldn't stay in custody for long. He'd continued ducking and dodging until authorities finally caught up with Floyd and locked him up permanently. This time, the charge was murder. After high school graduation, Mia and Shuri went on with their lives. Mia started organizing class reunions, but her old classmate Sharon never once showed up. Then, in 1991, she got the news.
Our five-year reunion, someone had said that she had passed away, and we didn't know all the details.
Sharon Marshall, she was found the victim of a hit-and-run accident in Oklahoma City and died 5 days later in a hospital.
Mia remembers when Curtis found out.
He got in his car and drove 4 hours, I think he said, to her gravesite.
And then I found out all this shit about Franklin, and it's just stuff starting adding up in my head. And it's like, God, I wish I would have figured that out a long time ago. She would have probably had a better life. And, you know, it really messed with me for a few years. I felt very guilty.
This is what the police report said. In April 1990, a woman left her motel room in Oklahoma City to go to a convenience store to buy milk. She was wearing headphones. As she walked along the center of an interstate road, she was struck by a car. Police identified her as Tanya Hughes, but when they went looking for a birth certificate, they found she used the name of an infant born in 1967 who died of pneumonia. So who was she? As investigators started to piece the story together, they realized the hit-and-run victim was Sharon Marshall. I know what you're thinking. There are so many unanswered questions, including a big one. Who was behind the wheel of the hit-and-run? Next time on Hello, John Doe.
The actual folders for the case, I would say, would stack about 6 feet high. It's one of the most unique cases I was ever involved with.
Sometimes I screamed, sometimes I cried. It was like reading a horror story that you're a part of, but not a part of.
I'm about to put my hand up to cut him off. And that's when he leaned back, closed his eyes, lifted his head a little bit. And I realized at that point he was recalling facts.
Hello, John Doe is an original production by Revelations Entertainment in association with First and Last Productions. From Revelations, our executive producers are Morgan Freeman and James Younger. From First to Last, Lindsay Moreno is the executive producer. Our producing partner is Neon Hum Media. It was written and produced by Kate Mishkin. Our editor is Catherine St. Louis. She is also Neon Hum Media's executive editor. Our executive producer is Shara Morris. Our development producer is Ian Lindsay. Our associate producer is Rufaro Faith Mazarura. Sound design and mixing by Scott Somerville. Theme and original music composed by Jesse Perlstein. Additional music came from Epidemic Sound and Blue Dot Sessions. Fendel Fulton is our fact checker. Our production manager is Samantha Allison. For My Heart Media, Dylan Fagan is our executive producer. Special thanks to Adelia Rubin at Neon Hum and Carrie Lieberman and Will Pearson at iHeartMedia. I'm Todd Matthews. You can learn more about NamUs at namus.gov. The number for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's call center is 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. The National Sexual Assault Hotline from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network is 1-800-656-4673. Okay, guys, this is the end of the show. If you didn't like it, don't do anything. But if you did like it, you make sure that you rate and review the show. It helps more people to find it and hear this wonderful story. Thanks again for listening.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.